Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of May, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, it looks like 3 million acres of farmland are underwater in the South. China has moved for the fifth time this year to curb inflation, and the IMF today reported Europe's debt crisis in countries like Ireland and Greece could spread across the continent. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And at the end of the half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will be here to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
On this Thursday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished lower in the nearby May wheat at $7.50, down 27.25. July at 735.5, 23.5 lower, and the September at 782.25, down 22.75. The hard red in Kansas City finished the July futures at $9.04.75, down 20.75, and the spring wheat in Minneapolis at the Grain Exchange at $8.76.25, down 23.75. Then we turn from red to green as we make our way to the corn pit back in Chicago. May futures at $6.81.25, up 12.5. July at 680.5, up 3.25. September at 653, a penny and 3/4 higher. And December futures up 4.5 cents at $6.30.5. And the March contract for the corn at 642, up 4.75. May soybeans today, $13.45.25. A settlement price up 11.75. July at 1342.75, 11 cents higher. And the November futures at $13.26.25, up 5.25. January at $13.34.75 for the new crop, up 5.75 as well. May bean meal at $3.49.10, $5 higher. May soybean oil at $56.21, up 14 cents on the day. The August feeder cattle at $111.42.5, settled 77.5 cents higher. The August feeders at $133.92.5, up 90. It was the live cattle at $111. And the May lean hogs at $92.62.5 were up 60 cents on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, June contract, $98.70 a barrel, 49 cents higher. Ethanol at 249 and 2 tenths, up a penny and a tenth. Natural gas at 419 and 2 tenths, a penny and a tenth higher there as well. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.91 and 1 tenth of a cent, up 1 3/10 of a cent. And the gold futures on the day finished $5.50 higher at $1,506.60. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,687, 57 points higher. The dollar at 75.24, down 0.08. And the CRB for the day at 338.56 on a Thursday afternoon, up 0.46. And here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. This afternoon, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms naturally, partly sunny, a high near 88 degrees, south-southwest winds at 11 to 15 miles an hour, they'll gust to 23. Chance of precip in the area, 40% today. Tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a low of 64. Southwest winds at 10 to 13, they'll gust as high as 16. Again, another 40% chance of precipitation. That jumps to 60% tomorrow when we'll be mostly cloudy with a high near 81 degrees. And by the time we get to Friday night, as we begin the weekend, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Cloudy, a low of 53. Saturday, that chance continues at 50%. Cloudy, a high near 67 degrees. And Saturday night, a 40% chance of showers in the area, cloudy, and a low of 52 degrees. On Sunday, 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a high near 61 Sunday night. Showers will continue, mostly cloudy, a low of 47. They'll fade away. Finally, on Monday, a partly sunny sky. It'll be breezy with a high near just 61 degrees. Monday night, partly cloudy, a low of 43. Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high of 65.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On a Thursday afternoon, time to check the agricultural futures markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Dan, thanks so much for being with us. It's been a whipsaw couple of days. Can you tell us about it fundamentally to begin with? Because we have new fundamentals in the market. A couple of things, of course, USDA's reports yesterday, and then a proposed or expected sale to China for corn today.
Well, there's just about a little bit of everything that's been in the market the past couple of weeks. I think one of the main ingredients, has been when the exchange started raising margin requirements on silver and gold. That seemed to kind of tumble those two, or silver and crude oil. That tumbled those markets, and those severe declines in those markets spilled on over into everything because everything is so intertwined today. Then you had a lot of hedge fund managers hedging their long commodity position by buying the dollar, because as the dollar strengthens, and that usually puts pressure on the downward on commodities. So you've got a lot of spreading, intertwined going on. The key, I think, though, is the market has still been in liquidation for some time. We keep losing open interest. Now, I noticed yesterday in soybeans, we stopped losing open interest. Open interest actually increased a little bit yesterday on beans. It may have done that in corn. I think the first thing we needed to do was kind of stabilize open interest levels. I would tell you that liquidation phase is over with. But the corn market, I think, is finding some support. Basically, technically, we found support at the 50% retracement level of the rally from the mid-March low up to the April high. Dease corn was right there today here at 615, 614. We bounced off of that. That's usually a good sign. We reversed up. We kind of got a little reversal up going. May corn, believe it or not, is to the point where it could maybe close higher for the week. July took the biggest beating this week, the unwinding of the long July short December spread. So July is not going to close higher for the week, but it has found support and has come back a little bit. Demand is... there's going to be talk about China probably from here on out. I guess one could argue that one could have been a little surprised that USDA didn't put some kind of China number in the balance sheet for next year. They chose not to, at least at this point in time, and left exports at $1.8 billion. Which was a little disappointing to the trade yesterday. My guess is at some point in time that they will put a China number in that balance sheet, things could look a little better down the road.
All right. So producers are now in the field, and they're wondering a whole bunch of things, I suppose. I think you're telling us that maybe we're at a stabilizing point, a consolidation sometimes, and that usually means we're ready to tip the scale either one way or the other. Is that your opinion first?
Yeah, well, my bias is that time-wise and price-wise, we'll have to see if we can get some follow-through from today's little bit reversal. But I think just looking at the calendar is that at some point in time here, the market is going to have to assess the prospects of how good a chance we're going to have of getting 92 million acres planted. And then they're going to have to decide, if we're not going to get 92 million planted, then what is going to be the number? And I think that has a lot to do with probably what the weather forecasts, how they materialize this week and early next week. It just seems that around May 18th, May 19th, May 20th, you can kind of go back and look at historically, and that seems to be the date that the trade kind of sizes up new crop prospects. And if there's something wrong, if it's too dry, too wet, whatever, the market then runs higher into the June timeframe. And I think we're approaching that window here, and it'll be interesting to see what happens next week because at some point in time, they're going to have to realize we're not going to get the 92 million planted. Now, what number that is, we'll have to kind of decide at that point in time. But I think next week's action is real important.
Well, there's your bias, right? Your bias in particular is that we won't have 92 million acres of corn?
Yeah, my bias is that way. I think that's not anything earth-shaking. The question is it, 91.5 or is it 90.5? And my guess is I think you could lose 1.5 million real easy. And then all of a sudden that changes the balance sheet a little bit. And then we'll be looking at the June weather pattern who gets the rain, who doesn't get the rain, and how crop prospects develop. But until this crop is a little more certain, I think it's going to be pretty difficult to totally kill it on the new crop. July is an altogether different animal. That one is just going to be really volatile. All the way until we see what that June 30th report is on the stocks number, whether or not USDA continues to confirm that we don't have the inventory around that at least one would think we had working in the cash markets. The cash markets have a lot of cash inventory around, but nobody knows for sure if that inventory is going to last the distance, especially with the late planting. Primarily in the southern areas, it usually had the early harvest. So old crop corn is still a real wild animal, and who knows how that plays out over the next 90 days.
So you don't believe the 730?
730.
Yeah, the 730.
Well, I don't know what to believe anymore.
I know you've been on the side that it's not there, so I'm just wondering.
Well, I guess I was a little surprised that the trade reacted so viciously to that number yesterday, and I think that tells you that there was more behind the story than that because, I mean, the way the market acted, you thought that was a stocks report rather than a supply-demand adjustment, and that's
right.
All that was a supply-demand adjustment. So I think it tells you that there was more behind yesterday's decline than probably that. That might have been used as a reason, but I think there was something a little more stronger behind that decline.
Okay, so let's go back to the acreage just very quickly. Do you think if there's a 500,000 or 1.5 million or whatever might disappear, is it can we get a handle yet on what might be in the south that is gone, or do you feel like that's all going to come out of the Eastern Corn Belt, and have they planted extra acres in northern Illinois and Iowa and Minnesota?
Well, I'm sure there's been a few people plant extra acres, but since we didn't get off to a real early start, I think the is more likely than not that they just stayed the course rather than hassle around or trying to get more fertilizer, more seed corn. Usually, and then the incentive is not necessarily that much more attractive either. So I think for the most part, people are going to stay their intentions. But granted, there could have been a little few more acres of corn maybe put in Iowa and Nebraska since they got off to a pretty good start. But I don't think anybody here in Illinois and Eastern Corn Belt that maybe got started is going to add any more acres. I think they're glad that they got the corn in, and now they're going to try to get their beans in. So I don't think we picked up that many acres.
Does it make it easier to put soybeans in Ohio and Indiana? Those tend to be states that are more bean friendly than some of those going to the west.
Well, there's not as good a quality as dirt. I don't want to insult anybody, but I mean, Iowa and Illinois have the good dirt, at least in the northern parts of it. And anytime you get into land or quality of land that is not quite as good in the corn, is sometimes just as good in beans. So it makes it maybe a little easier for them to switch to beans.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That one happens each and every Thursday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Closing Market Report. Dave Dickey's here now with today's news.
In agricultural news, information is trickling in suggesting that nearly 3 million acres of farmland in three southern U.S. states have been submerged by floodwaters. Arkansas, Tennessee, and Mississippi have each lost or were expected to lose around 1 million acres. But so far, only Arkansas has detailed figures on how much of each crop has been affected. Nearly 300,000 acres of rice in Arkansas, or about 10% of total U.S. acreage, might not be planted due to flooding. About 900,000 acres of farmland in Mississippi was flooded or expected to flood. In Tennessee, early estimates indicate that around 1 million farm acres may be underwater, swamping yet-to-be-harvested winter wheat and stalling planting of corn, soybeans, and cotton. China has ordered most of its banks today to increase the amount of money they hold in reserves in a new move to curb inflation after higher-than-expected price rises in April. The central bank's order was the fifth reserve increase this year and came a day after the government reported April inflation was 5.3%. The People's Bank of China ordered most banks to increase reserves by 0.5% of their deposits as of next Wednesday. That will raise reserves for the biggest institutions to 21% of deposits. The International Monetary Fund today says that despite bailouts for Greece, Ireland, and Portugal, Europe's debt crisis could still spread to core Eurozone countries and the emerging economies of Eastern Europe. The semi-annual IMF report said peripheral members of the Eurozone needed to make unrelenting reform efforts to overcome the debt crisis and prevent it spreading further. It also urged the European Central Bank to tread carefully on further rises in interest rates after last month's first increase since 2007, saying Eurozone monetary policy could afford to remain relatively accommodative. Traders today say that a Chinese trade delegation now in Argentina may be looking for a bulk purchase of soy oil and is likely to discuss possible corn purchases. The China National Grain and Oils Information Center also is citing market talk, saying buyers may be seeking 300,000 to 400,000 tons of soy oil from Argentina. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, it's mid-May, and Lisa Brault already has been harvesting behind her house. Just don't tell her husband, who would rather see something else growing in the backyard.
My husband doesn't like asparagus very much. That's putting it mildly, actually. In fact, this is his reaction whenever someone asks him if he likes it. He makes this horrified face, and then he says,
"Yuck. Have you seen how it grows out of the ground?"
He says it looks like an alien trapped underground, trying to escape, its purple or green tentacles perennially reaching through the earth every spring. Needless to say, he was not thrilled when I, an asparagus lover, announced last year that I was dedicating a large bed in the corner of our backyard to asparagus, his most feared vegetable. He's not too wrong about it, actually. Asparagus is pretty weird from start to finish. Asparagus grows from crowns, and when you buy them at the garden store or get them in the mail, they look like big wads of spaghetti or little baby squid. You have to dig a trench a foot deep for them and plant them with some extra compost, so they're a little more labor-intensive than, say, tossing some lettuce seeds into the ground. Then, I've been told you're not supposed to eat what comes up for 2 years in order to establish the plants. Instead, you let them grow until they fern out. They turn into ferns more than 6 feet tall, and these ferns provide food for the crowns below as opposed to providing food for you. Asparagus also doesn't like weeds. It also likes to be fed. Asparagus is a process. Not only that, asparagus is the first crown jewel of the new growing season, but its own season is pretty short. I noticed some action in our neighbor's very established asparagus patch in early April. It grows visibly over a period of several hours under the right conditions, so for several weeks, these wonderfully generous neighbors of ours offered up a bonanza of extra asparagus. It's now the second week of May, and the patch is, regrettably, slowing down. And while you'll see asparagus at local farmers' markets for a few more weeks, when it's over at the end of the month or in early June, there are no regrets, no remember whens, no strays popping up here and there. Not for asparagus. When it's over, it's over. If you decide to grow it, you should let those last stalks grow into those ferns I mentioned above so they can provide food for the crowns and enjoy it as fancy-looking landscaping for the rest of the summer and into the fall. Plant accordingly. So asparagus is a little high maintenance, and it has a pretty short growing season, and it has a weird growing habit. But it's yummy. Oh, it is so yummy. Whether you cut it fresh from someone's yard or buy it at a local farmer's market, or if you're lucky enough to happen upon some growing wild along railroad tracks or gravel roads out in the country, it needs practically nothing to dress it up. An impromptu Facebook poll of my friends revealed a myriad of ways to eat it. I personally love eating it scrambled with eggs. Some like to roast it with a little olive oil, salt, and pepper, maybe adding some lemon juice. It's good roasted over whole wheat penne pasta with a little Parmesan cheese, says another friend. Yet another friend told me that some of her asparagus had gone missing. It took her most of the week to figure out that her young children were picking it and eating it before she could get to it. Finally, and this is my favorite because it's totally true, another friend told me that she and her family eat it always. Binge on it, was actually how she put it, for the entire season. And just when they might be sort of starting to get a little tired of asparagus all those ways, the season is over and they move on to something else. Eating seasonally is like that. No regrets. No remember whens. Of course, you can find asparagus year-round at your local grocery stores if you want it. But besides being way more flavorful, Illinois-grown asparagus is a sign. It's a real sign of spring, that the sun is heading back in the right direction. That in the time between when the first spears, start showing through the earth and when those last stalks are allowed to get big and blowsy and ferny, spring's flowering trees will have come and gone. The tulips and daffodils will have bloomed. The farmer's market will have started. Urbana-Champaign will have returned for a couple of months to being a sleepy little college town. And asparagus will have yielded to the next seasonal superstar, strawberries. Best be getting your shortcake recipes ready. Strawberry season will be here sooner than you think.
Lisa Brott's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com. If you have an idea for In My Backyard, email us at willagstaff@illinois.edu. That's willagstaff@illinois.edu. It's National Nutty Fudge Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1777, according to the International Dairy Foods Association, the first ice cream advertisement appeared in the New York Gazette. In 1934, dust shut out the sun over the East Coast for 5 hours, and dust was reported settling on ships 300 miles out to sea in what was the first nationwide environmental disaster. The Dust Bowl days of the 1930s were caused by the clearing of virgin prairie with plows, long drought, and high winds. and it resulted in the formation of the USDA Soil Conservation Service. In 1991, a new cancer drug was announced, which was found in the bark of a rare tree in the Pacific Northwest. And in 1994, Roy J. Pluckett died. He was the inventor of Teflon in 1938. Its invention was an accident. During World War II, the new polymer was applied as a corrosion-resisting coating to protect metal equipment used in the production of radioactive material. The first non-stick cookware using Teflon was sold in 1960. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us to take up the agricultural weather forecast is meteorologist Pete Levitt. Thanks, Pete, for being with us today.
My pleasure, Todd. Good afternoon.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest. Lots of chances of showers, but how often will we see them?
Well, the next 24 hours, it's going to be just scattered stuff, but then the showers start to set in fairly frequently as we get into late tomorrow, late Friday, through Saturday and Sunday, and then into the early part of next week and Monday. By Tuesday, Wednesday, they'll probably become more scattered again. And I think the area that's going to be most affected will be the eastern Corn Belt states, maybe a piece of eastern Iowa, but much of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, just the areas where the planting is so far behind schedule. And with today's beautiful weather, it doesn't appear as though things are going to be quite as bad as I think they are going to be the next few days, because we're going to see the temperatures drop sharply into the 40s and 50s again, and with a lot of precipitation, it's not good.
Yeah, how much rainfall and how widespread?
Oh, I think it's very good coverage of anywhere from 1.5 to 2.5 inches with a few isolated heavier amounts. And these areas will include central and southern Illinois, much of Indiana and Ohio, and Kentucky and Tennessee as well. We'll see quite a bit of precipitation in this period. And they'll just not give any of those areas a chance to dry out between episodes of showers as we move into the first half of next week.
So that'll ground things to a halt for a while. And then once we look past the early part of next week, do we dry out or do we have more systems?
Yeah, it dries out again, but the pattern doesn't change. It's just another respite for a few days, and then it looks like we get showery once more as we get into the following weekend and the early part of the following week. It doesn't look quite as wet at this time then, but it doesn't take much now that the soil is so saturated getting the crop underway. The other problem they have, of course, further west and north, where they have done some planting, Iowa did a wonderful job of getting stuff into the ground this past week. In those areas, it's the soil temperatures, which are so low. Emergence will be slow, and early growth will be slow, and temperatures are going to average below normal through most of next week, anywhere from 3 to 15 degrees below normal.
And then very quickly, a quick word on the southwest. They are burning up down there.
Yeah, that area is still suffering from heat, and the moisture just can't get back in there. It's all being directed from the Gulf North into the Midwest. And so with the absence of moisture and these active systems to the north creating strong winds, it looks as though those hot, dry weather will continue in those areas.
Thanks so much, Pete.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.